we should back away from the bold ideas that the base and the grassroots care about. Sorry. Oh,
sorry, I'm just trying to get some ranch.
Go ahead.
Here with a fresh Tuesday dose of Nightshade for you to pour some ranch over. Our first story today, here's the big news. I called this one wrong. Bernie Sanders is... Is that going to be a thing? Bernie Sanders is running for... president. He announced this morning in a campaign video. He quite obviously got styling tips from Guy Benson. He has the button-down shirt with the button-down collar and a tie, and they did something with his hair. He's looking very corporate for a communist. Here's the campaign ad that he cut. Let's break this thing down. Like a Russian car.
Real change never takes place from the top on down, but always from the bottom on up.
Pause it. So, when Trump is changing America, because he's laterally Hitler, it's not real change. When the Supreme Court is being activist, as people say, it's not real change. Is it? What does he mean by not real change? It's not real change because it's not going to last, or it's not real change because it's not good change? It doesn't come from the top down. He is a socialist. There's nothing wrong for this next 2 seconds being a socialist. Socialism means top-down planning. That's what it means! You could have anarcho-socialism. That's not the kind of socialism he likes. He wants it from Washington. Medicare for all. Not Medicare for Albany. Medicare for all. It comes from where? The top. I guess the whole argument is, oh, it's not really the top because we represent the people at the bottom. Cool story. What would it mean not to represent the people at the bottom? Just like, okay, go play some more of this.
Bernie Sanders' healthcare for all idea is gaining steam.
Free tuition. Free college tuition. Free tuition champion.
Holy shit. The big argument against him. The big argument against him is, you're saying this is free, you're saying that's free, you're saying this is free. Who's going to pay for all this? This is the argument even from Hillary. It's like, okay, I like your ideas, I like your ideals. It would be great if everyone could go to college for free. It would be great if everyone could have health care. How are you going to pay for this? That's the joke about him. And he literally just had the ad that goes, free, free, free. Holy crap. And this is what's amazing. Look at this. This headline. You paused it exactly perfectly. Free college is now reality in nearly 20 states. There's a big difference between there exists some people going to college for free, nearly 20. Nearly 20. 20 is such a huge number out of 50. We should just round up to it. Nearly 20. Nearly. So let's suppose there's 19, because 19 is hard to type, because you got the N. Then you're like, all right, another I, then an N. Is there an E in it? Is it like 15, or is it the 9 spelled out? No, I think it's spelled out. Then you got to go back to and two more E. 19 is hard to spell out, so nearly 20 states. All this is saying is, in nearly 20 states, in 19 states, some people are going to college for free. There's a difference between... hey, some people, probably state colleges, get a free ride, and everyone in America gets a free ride. Or, even a big difference between everyone in this state gets a free ride. None of those states, none of them, have it where every college is free. All it has is that there are free colleges in that state. So... this is so fucking disingenuous. And the other thing is, if I'm pointing this out this easily, so will everybody else. Because I'm not too bright. Let's go ahead.
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders added, the greatest threat to national security is climate change.
The future of our planet is at stake.
Pause it, pause it.
Sanders.
What does that mean? The biggest threat to our national security is climate change. It's like George W. Bush says, you know what? I care about welfare. I care about health care. I care about this. Our biggest threat is national security. 9/11 happened. It's our biggest threat, the neocon position. I agree, but the biggest security threat is climate change. Is the sun going to shoot meteors at us? What is that? National security? This is such a bait and switch. If he means economic security, that's not what people mean when they say national security. The biggest threat to... wouldn't that be the biggest threat to international security? I really don't think climate change is localized in the U.S., but then I'm no climatologist, unlike Bernie Sanders. Wow, this is even worse than I thought. And the other thing is, Bernie was great at being unorthodox. And these are vapid talking points. Go ahead. Wow.
Taking on Amazon.
Bernie Sanders has been consistent hammering about income inequality.
Nobody in America works 40 hours a week, should be living in poverty. So our economy is rigged. We have a campaign finance system which is corrupt.
Sanders leading the charge to stop war against Yemen.
The first time ever the Senate has voted to end an unauthorized war.
Okay, this is great. If he's talking specifics like the Yemen bill, the war in Yemen and things like that, that is a very big difference from everyone else. And that's also saying, okay, he's going to talk about ideas that matter to people. That is really putting him outside of the pack for the other one. So that was very smart, and also gives him heft. Go ahead.
The fight against injustice has been the work of his life.
Jobs and education, not jails and incarceration.
Wait, you know what? Hold this. Bernie's big issue. Rewind it like 30 seconds if you can. Bernie's big issue was he didn't do well among minorities. He did well among college whites. And they know this. So I'm going to watch this. We're going to play the last 30 seconds over. I'm not going to say anything. And watch how many times they just made a point to have black people there.
War. The fight against injustice has been the work of his life.
Jobs and education, not jails and incarceration.
We are not going to retreat on women's rights.
Go back to that shot. Look at this. When they show his crowd, it's all white. So when he's in school and when there's an imaginary school with an imaginary kid, right? Keep going. We got a black doctor. And then right after that, we have a black student. So these are actors. Right? This is actors. Bernie's not there. Then we got this march. Who knows what it is? He's marching with people. Then it gets to his crowd. Look at his crowd. Oh! White. Oh, there's a woman in hijab. Okay. I take that back. Muslim. And then up. White. Pull back to the whole crowd. Hold on. I'm going to look at the screen. 1 second. I literally just looked. I don't see a single black person in there. Do you see a single black person in that crowd?
I don't, but I'm looking at it, and I think it's a women's march, right? That's why they're all wearing pink, maybe?
Yeah, but then there would be a bigger proportion of, if the women's march leans left, you're going to have a higher proportion of women of color in a women's march than you would in a random crowd of women, because women of color tend to lean left as well. Yeah. There's not one black person. There's a guy in the front with the glasses, front left, bottom left. I'm sure they were meant the women's march, of course. And maybe he's a reporter or something. Do you see any black person?
Is that guy black? He's got dreadlocks, okay. Right?
But that's a reporter.
His camera's.
That's a reporter. Because look, the front row is all the journalists. Look to his left. There you go. See, that's a journalist. The vest. The guy's left, not our left.
Oh, this person's black, right?
Okay, we have a black person. Why? It's like, where's Waldo? Where's Negro?
Oh.
In the Bernie Sanders crowd. Holy. You know, it's usually funny. Jim Goad makes this point that one of the big reasons blacks became slaves was because they were visually different. So it's easy to oppress people who look different from you because you can spot them in a crowd. right? So this is a very effective mechanism for the South, because many of why the Underground Railroad had to get people to Canada, because when you had freed blacks get to the North, they still could be stopped and sent back to the South, because people would spot them and be like, okay, show me your papers or whatever. And you would think spotting a black person in a crowd of white people would be easy, not in a Bernie Sanders crowd. Holy shit, that is fucking amazing. Like, they needed that crowd shot. Like, they couldn't, I guess if they substituted some other crowd shot, people would catch them for it. What does that source say at the bottom right? YouTube.com? But I can't see the rest of the URL.
It says user rights and democracy.
Okay, wow. Okay, let's play more of this. Oh my God, this gets worse and worse. This is hilarious.
On women's rights.
Sanders pushing a bold agenda that includes protecting DACA recipients.
Pause this,
and
pause this. This is stupid. And Scott Adams, look, there's black people right there, front and center. Scott Adams talks about this. If you don't follow him on Twitter, you absolutely must. His whole point is, like, the stupidest thing Hillary ever did was during the campaign, she kept saying, imagine Donald Trump as president and there's a nuclear war. Imagine Donald Trump as president. And his point is, the biggest argument against Trump is you can't even wrap your head around the idea this guy's going to be president. It's an absurdity. And his opponent keeps telling people, imagine him being president, imagine him being president, imagine him being president. That takes away their biggest argument, because now you're imagining it. It becomes that one step closer to being reality. And look at that screen on the text. Sanders administration heartless toward immigrants. There's a colon. You don't really see it. That is crazy to have writing like that, because people's brains work in weird ways. It has to say Trump administration heartless against it. Look at that shit. That's stupid. Go ahead.
I think it's Sanders, and then it's right, and then it's saying he said that administration heartless towards immigrants, right?
Right, but yeah. My point is when you scan it very quickly, the brain, on a subliminal level, picks it up as the
totally,
yeah,
totally. It took me a minute, and that's definitely not how long it's going to be on the screen. Shall we go?
Right.
Comprehensive immigration reform.
You don't rip little children away from the arms of their mother.
A major announcement from Amazon. Amazon will raise its minimum wage to $15 an hour. 350,000 workers. Thousands of workers at Disney World will get raises. It's a victory for Bernie Sanders.
It's a victory for all workers. Brothers and sisters, we have a lot of work.
You know, pause it, pause it. The one, see if you can catch that in one shot. He did it really quick. The one shot was of a lady in hijab. There it is. You saw her? Everything's a group except for hijab lady. Look at that. This is some subliminal shit. This is ISIS shit. Crowd, crowd, crowd. Hijab lady. Crowd, crowd, crowd. Go back and play this little quip really quick. I think that's the... Can we go slow? Is there any other shot where it's only one person? Nope. That's Bernie. Okay, Bernie and a crowd. Bernie in a crowd, white people. Okay, he's with black people now, and a fat lady in the corner lurking over his shoulder. Up, hijab lady, crowd, crowd, Bernie and friends, young people signing his book. Wait, there was one we just missed. It's gonna be quick. Okay, he's with Killer Mike. All right, that's Killer Mike, right? Or am I being racist? I think that's Killer Mike. Keep going. Crowd. Crowd. Crowd, crowd, one lady. Okay, oof. I don't know what that is. Keep going. She gets bullied, that's for sure. Go ahead. Kids, he's smiling. We got a rainbow flag. I said flag. Okay, handicapped person. And talking to someone in a wheelchair. Go ahead. Old veteran. That was the... Is that the end? Hit play. Okay, Asian lady. Oh my God, that's the only shot of one person. Was the girl in hijab. That is absolutely amazing. Holy shit. That was the one shot, and I caught it. That's why they pay me the big bucks. Because I can spot that hijab. There, I saw it. You got it. You just missed it. Fierce. Fabulous. Flawless.
If we are prepared
wow.
to stand together,
yeah, leave this.
I thought it was
there
for my
is no end to what the great people of our nation can accomplish.
That's amazing. I thought he's still going to do well. He's not going to do that well. Ooh. That is interesting stuff. We got a story now, so... Is it Garrett writing these now? Who is it?
It's Garrett, yeah.
Tag team of Garrett and John.
They're doing good. They're doing good work.
Well, maybe we'll start writing them for their shows.
Yeah, that's good. You can explain what a colon does. or a semicolon. The Hill, one of the things about punditry is when the presidential campaign or the primaries have started, but not much is going on, you still got to fill space. So it's interesting when they have these handicapping articles. And The Hill broke down that their top 10 of The Hill's rankings of who the contenders are. I wanted to go through this and give you guys my thoughts on these choices. Number one, they have Kamala Harris. And that she's had by far the best launch, and they said her speech was powerful, and her appearances in early states have been well received, as have her initial round of media interviews. She's also pulled out some early endorsements, including Representative Barbara Lee and Gavin Newsom. And okay, there's still plenty of questions that she has to answer. So they have her ranked, and early front runners can easily become unstuck. But for now, Harris is the most. Is the most formidable candidate. They had January 1st. They had her at number four. Now they have her at number one. Here's why I think they're wrong, and I don't blame them for putting her at number one, because she's number one in terms of the media. The media always gloms onto one candidate and they try to make her think. It's exactly the same thing with Beto O'Rourke or Beto, whatever the fuck his name is, in Texas and the Senate race against Ted Cruz. Like, they're the second coming. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. They become fixated in person. That's her this round. She's already become on. What they need to do. Notice what they're not mentioning. And this is just shows how lazy and out of it the corporate press is. They're not mentioning social media. On the one hand, no one, including them, would deny that social media had a profound impact on the 2016 election, that Trump weaponized Twitter, that from their point of view, fake news, blah, 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 had all these misinformed stories being spread about Hillary and she never hurt nobody and all this other stuff, right? There's no mention of social media here. Social media has been gunning for Harris already. So that is complete shows how they're disingenuous and or deluded. You could even go back to 2012. There were so many articles about data mining and Barack Obama and this thing that they had and no one be able to stop him and blah, 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 Facebook and targeted ads and identifying voters and how they use the internet. There's no mention here. How the fuck? Let's suppose you had top 10 musicians or top 10 whatever, and none of them discussed their social media presence. Even Drag Race, when they break down there's a new season, they go, who has the most Instagram likes? Who has the most Twitter following? That is such an easy metric to determine how candidates compare to each other. And what else? It's an objective metric. Because you could say, okay, she has the most social – this are Twitter followers. This is Amy Klobuchar. And then you're not just talking out of your ass. These people are such idiots and frauds. Number two, they have Joe Biden. And they're saying for all the excitement about Harris, he still beats every other Democratic voter in candidate in the polls. And in the last poll, Emerson poll on Saturday, he was 10 points ahead of Bernie Sanders. And Harris was third, which was 2 points behind Bernie. And a Morning Consult poll earlier last week put him 7 points ahead of Sanders and 16 points ahead of Harris. So how is he in second? Like, it makes no sense. Other than he hasn't announced. So in 2016, as we all know, he mulled a run for a long time. His son had died from brain cancer, and he ultimately chose not to force himself through the campaign. And this time, he's almost certain to declare a candidacy soon. And they're saying his weaknesses are his age. He'd be 78 on Inauguration Day, and he's got some past votes that were regarded now as heresy for the Democratic base. But his skills as a retail politician, they're saying, and loyal service rate years to Obama stand in his favor. He used to be at number three. Now he's at number two. Here's what I predict. Here's my prediction. And I didn't want to put this on Twitter because it would sound like a threat. Given how bonkers politics has been and how hilariously bonkers politics has been, I bet money that before the 2020 election, between Trump, Sanders, Hillary, Biden, and Warren, one of them will be dead. I bet you it's going to happen. I don't want it to happen. I wish nothing but good health for all these people. But I bet you it's going to happen, because it's like, because how I sit and think about politics is like, what could go even crazier? And like, that would be one of them. The only time something like that has happened was in 1912, when, to my knowledge, recent memory is that William Howard Taft's running mate died before the election, and Nicholas Murray Butler, he was either the running mate or the replacement, who was the president of Columbia. Anyway, number three, they have Bernie. They said he's a clear top flight contender. Polls put him in second, and he could be end up. But they're saying he could end up being a victim of his own success, because his stronger than expected challenge to Hillary showed an appetite. But now other declared candidates are running on progressive platforms that could blunt his appeal, and he has other problems, including the enmity from Hillary supporters. And in January, he apologized to women who were mistreated or harassed by his staff. And his decision to give his own rebuttal to State of the Union aggravated activists who thought they were taking a spotlight away from Stacey Abrams. And age is an issue. He's 77. They had him at number two previously. I am very curious how these debates are going to tell a lot. And it's also going to be really interesting to see. What does that mean?
You know, like a butt squeegee.
When I say what does that mean, that doesn't mean repeat the phrase.
Yeah, but you know, like a butt squeegee. For the win. That's what FTW means, somebody told me.
What's a butt squeegee?
Or it means fuck the world. I'm not really sure.
It does not mean fuck the world.
Now, a butt squeegee, everybody's got one. It's a small squeegee that you use on your butt to, you know, you soap, then you lather, and then you butt squeegee, right? Everybody? No? Not everybody does that?
It's not a sick burn. That's an unsick burn. Historically speaking, the Republicans for a long time, for decades, nominated the last loser. If that's the case, it would be Sanders this time around, because the Democrats switched. They had nominated the last loser starting in 2016. I think it's going to be tough for him. It's always tough for outsider candidates, and the establishment hates Trump so much that they might really dig in their heels. Number four is really stupid on this list. They have Beto at number four. You could scroll up to number five, Peter. He's lost his Senate race. His only they previously had him at number one. This is so fucking stupid. Okay, we're gonna cut this list. I'm never gonna do this article again. Warren was number five. We're gonna do Beto and then Warren. Number one. There's no scenario on earth where Beto O'Rourke was the most likely Democratic nominee. He was not in the Senate. I don't think anyone since like the 1800s, if then, has become the nominee from the House. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's really a long time. I know John G. Blaine was Speaker of the House, and he was nominated in like 1872 or something, or 76. But come on, that's Speaker. He's barely had any congressional career. He lost the Senate race. He's the most likely candidate. Where's it? I mean, yeah, he raised more money than anyone else in the last cycle for the Senate, but that money all went down the drain. He has no one owes him favors. He can't pay them back. A lot of times, you know, like a senator will be powerful. People will give them money because that person can reciprocate. He has no power left. Number one, this is terrible. And the press has already moved on to Kamala Harris. So he is the idea that he's going to be the nominee. It was at any point the most likely front runner. No polls had him at number one. This God, the Hill is such a hill of shit. And Warren at number five. The idea that he was more likely than Elizabeth Warren, who has a proven track record, even though she's been made a laughingstock by Trump. Oh, my God. This is absurd. Okay. We're going to move on to two videos. First is by Stephen Miller, who's one of the last few Bannonites left in the White House. And he was on Fox discussing Trump and his emergency declaration to build the wall, and whether this is unconstitutional and whether it's a bunch of BS. Let's watch this.
Exclusive interview, White House senior policy advisor Stephen Miller.
So,
Stephen?
What was interesting is, look at that punim. The last time he was on one of these shows, he had spray on hair, and everyone made fun of him for it, and now it's gone. Oh, God, he's so creepy looking in that screenshot. Can you grab that screen grab so next time we talk about him, we have that exact photo? Because it's so creepy. Oh, God. Got it? Okay, let's watch this.
Welcome back to Fox News Sunday.
Great to be here. Thank you.
I want to start with something that President Trump said Friday when he was declaring a national emergency. Here he is.
I could do the wall over a longer period of time. I didn't need to do this, but I'd rather do it much faster.
I didn't need to do this. How does that justify a national emergency?
Well, as you know, Chris, we already have 4,000 troops on the border in light of the national emergency, a decision that was made almost a year ago, as we've seen an increasing number of people crossing the border, as well as increasing violence in Mexico. Well, the president was saying...
Is it true? I don't even really know if it's true that there's increasing people over the border. And even if there was no wall, I would bet money that Trump is at least allocating resources there to guard the border. So how are there increasing number of people crossing? I'm ignorant on the subject. It's not being rhetorical. It just doesn't make sense to me. I could be wrong. There's obviously something I'm missing here. Go ahead.
Is that like past presidents, he could choose to ignore this crisis, choose to ignore this emergency, as others have, but that's not what he's going to do.
The president talks about...
Wait. He didn't answer the question. How is this an emergency? Well, people ignored in the past, so. What?
Also showing that it's not an emergency.
Yeah, right. Well, no, but it's just funny. It's just like, hey, why is this an emergency? Because people used to ignore it. What? What? That's not what emergency means. It means noticed. If people ignored it, now you're not ignoring it, you're noticing it. It's not it's certainly not in a legal sense an emergency. Go ahead.
Used that word multiple times on Friday, an invasion on the southern border. But let's look at the facts. I want to put them up on the screen. 1.6 million people were stopped crossing the border illegally back in 2000. Less than a quarter that many were caught last year. The government's own numbers show, for all the presidents talk about drugs streaming over the border, 80 to 90% of the cocaine, heroin, and fentanyl seized at the border is seized at ports of entry, not...
Well, that means we need the wall, because you're getting at the ports of entry, but you're not getting in the other spots.
That's only 10%, and the Americans need that 10% to
get high. You don't understand how they're phrasing it. What they're saying is that the cocaine that they caught is being caught at the ports of entry. That means that the cocaine that they're not catching wouldn't be part of that 90%.
Yeah, the 10% is what they're not catching.
No, Drew. They're saying of the cocaine that's seized... 80 to 90 was seized in this place, in these ports of entry. It's not mentioning the cocaine that wasn't seized. They don't know how much wasn't seized. Do you understand?
Yeah.
You don't?
No, I get it.
Explain it back to me then.
10%. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. 80% of the 80 to 90% of the cocaine that was seized was at the ports of entry.
Right. So there's 10% that was seized in other places. But in terms of what that amount that was seized is, in terms of the total cocaine, heroin, fentanyl that got into this country, we don't know. Because it wasn't seized to begin with.
Gotcha.
Okay. Keep going.
Along unfenced areas. And in 2017, twice as many of the new people in the country illegally were from visa overstays.
Hey, pause. So this is something else. Like, I got into this on Twitter because... When you say someone has a bad argument, for most people, they hear you saying, I don't agree with your position. And I'm like, these are not synonyms at all. If I'm saying this is not a valid point, that doesn't mean you're wrong. It just means your point is not right in service to your bigger argument. So one of the big things on Twitter, people coming at me is going, oh, well, you have walls around your house, so you need to build a wall or else immigrants. I'm like, by that logic, you should have a roof over America. It's not a good argument. Yeah, I have windows too. Does that mean to let air in? Do you need windows on this wall? Whether you want immigrants or not, that is not a good metaphor. And this is also the broader point, which is it's far more people come in staying here by airplanes and just don't leave. Now, that's not saying, oh, well, you don't care about the ones across the border. No one said that. I'm just saying in terms of proportion, building a wall – even if it took care of literally every single one of those 303,000 illegal crossings, it's not addressing two-thirds of the illegal immigrants. So if this is a serious issue, as many people think, the wall is only, even theoretically at best, addressing one-third of the problem. Unless the planes fly into walls that are coming here with the visa people, which can happen. Okay, go ahead.
As we're from crossing the border, again, where's the emergency, the national emergency, to build a wall?
There's a lot of data you just presented there, so I'd like to go through it each one piece at a time if I could. So let's start with your point about the border crossings in the year 2000. Well, as you know, when George Bush came into office, illegal immigration total doubled from 6 million to 12 million by the time he left office. That represented an astonishing betrayal of the American people. And I'm not going to sit here today and tell you that George Bush defended this country on its southern border, because he did not.
Wow.
One of the biggest changes that's happened since then and now is the mass release of illegal aliens due to a patchwork of court rulings and loopholes in our federal laws and changing tactics from smugglers and transnational organizations.
I don't want to go into all of this, but I mean, let's just focus on that one issue. Right. Four times as many people were coming across the border
then,
in 2000 as now. So why is that a natural
emergency? Back then, 95% could be turned around in a matter of days. As a result of loopholes, active judicial rulings, and increasing sophistication from cartels, the reality is that more than half of people crossing the border are what we call non-impactable. They can't be turned around. And so what you see is sophisticated operations and smugglers will actually push out migrants and children and family units to divert border agents, and then because there's not secured areas with the wall, they'll then cross after the border agents have been diverted to those areas. But at a fundamental level, we could go down to the details, and you know, Chris, I could go down to the details as much as you want to. But the bottom line is this.
Please don't.
but the bottom line is this. You cannot conceive of a nation without a strong, secure border. It is fundamental and essential to the idea of sovereignty and national survival to have control over who enters and doesn't enter the country.
Pause it.
Get into the statistics.
All that's true. None of that answers the question of how this is a legal emergency. All of that is 100% true. You have to have sovereignty. You have to have borders. You have to secure the borders. Otherwise, you can't have, you know, it's a mess. Fine. That doesn't answer his question. And on that note, my bed has a wall, and I hope yours does too, so you could have some sweet dreams.
Big girls. I hope they don't have diabetes. You look really familiar. You must have a talent.